It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show. With me in the studio are two really fantastic guests. I feel really fortunate to be able to have both of them with us for this show. We have Pogo and we have Gap. And if you live and work inside or around the Beltway, I don't have to tell you what Pogo and Gap stand for because they're part of sort of the internal fabric of our government. But most importantly, for the purpose of our show, these are public interest watchdogs here to talk about agency watchdogs, the IGs. And who better to talk about that than POGO, which is the Project on Government Oversight. Scott Amy, their general counsel, is with us in the studio. And I think, Scott, your first time on our show.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. And when you think of Gap, frankly, there's only one person. You think Gap's a one-man show. You really just think it's just one person, Tom Devine. So if you're going to have Gap on your show, you better have Tom Devine. And we're very lucky to have Tom with us today in the show. Tom, I think it might be your first time on our show also.
It's the first time on this show. Fed News Radio has been gracious to invite us regularly. And I think I better correct your premise. There are 20 very hardworking activists at Gap.
I know. I've been on the website. I've been on the website. But when I think of Gap, and I work, you know, very much inside and around and about the federal community, when I think of Gap, I really just think of you, Tom. And you've done such incredible work for federal whistleblowers, you know, for many, many years. And it can be a very thankless job, except when you go to read your website, you can see the great successes that Gap has had.
It's made me more idealistic rather than more cynical. It's always as if you can expect trouble for committing the truth as a whistleblower, but there's nothing more powerful than the truth if it's used strategically. And I've seen and helped David beat Goliath so many times that I'm a believer.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I encourage all of our listeners to go to both websites. They're really both very informative websites. They're deep. They have a lot of deep information about what they do, the successes, the topics that we're going to be talking about today. We are going to be talking about their view of government watchdogs, the IG community, and there are these issues trickling up and bubbling up and around about the IG community and concerns that people who deal with the IGs are starting to have. And it was sort of the genesis for the show. But before we dig into the topic, I think our listeners would really benefit from hearing from each of you about your individual organizations. So, Scott, starting with you, the Project on Government Oversight, we call you POGO. I like that acronym. It sounds upbeat and happy, but you guys are real serious.
No, certainly. POGO has been around since 1981, which is a pretty good shelf life for a Washington, D.C. watchdog organization. And we were actually started by whistleblowers, which a lot of people don't realize. There were a lot of people during the Reagan Cold War buildup that were starting to see some issues with military spending that they didn't like, and they wanted a place to go report. And so at that point, Gap was created to help represent those whistleblowers, but POGO was created to operate as a middle person in which we unearth the issues that they're reporting and we expose them and promote the solutions and try to keep the heat off of the people that were coming forward. And so we started as the Project on Military Procurement, and we were the organization that exposed the hammers, the toilet seats, and the coffee pots and all the outrageous spare parts.
I think they're probably still spending $1,000 for a toilet seat. I'm a cynic. I think it's still happening.
In certain instances, and now I think it's other things. Now it's services, and now it's IT. I mean, now we're seeing it in other places. It may not be right. A hammer or toilet seat or a screw. But we're actually going to, you know, seeing outrageous prices on a lot of goods and services that the government is buying. And so that's what we do. We expanded and became the Project on Government Oversight, in which we started to take a look at all federal agencies. And we've been stomping forward since then and trying to improve the way that the government works and make them more accountable, effective, ethical, and open. And so, yeah, there's not a day that goes by where there's not work for us to do in a given day.
Yeah. And I want people to encourage them to go to your website. It's just chock full of letters and reports on issues going on in almost every federal agency. And when you look at the size of your staff, I think to myself, because you have like a handful or less of investigators, how do you get it all done? Because it's very dense, the amount of work that appears to be going on at POGO.
Yeah, we get accused of being very wonky all the time and nerdy. And so we are in the government weeds a lot. And so it does make it hard. And yes, we do have a very small staff. Everything we do pretty much internally. Our investigative staff is probably 8 people at this point. And so we're trying to, you know, keep a very large government accountable with a very, you know, limited amount of resources in a limited group. But at the same time, you know, I think we're very effective in what we do in trying to push issues and get reforms, not only by pushing them through Congress, but also pushing them with the executive branch and working with the media and the whistleblowers and trying to protect them and get their issues out there.
Yeah, and it's certainly in the last 5 years or more, I perceive POGO's really being able to make its impact. So we're really just delighted to be able to have you on the show and talk more about the work that POGO does. And Tom, GAP is around Government Accountability Project. You guys have been around since...
Our hair is a little bit grayer than POGO's. We started in 1977. And actually, the roots of our project were Daniel Ellsberg's release of the Pentagon Papers. We were part of the Institute for Policy Studies, which packaged those in the early years.
Yeah. And you've been with GAP since?
January 1979, full-time. But I worked on their conferences in 1976 and 77, too.
Yeah. No, it's heartwarming that somebody could remain that committed to something so important to our democracy, you know, protecting people who blow the whistle from the inside, which is really critical to sort of self-examination.
Well, the whistleblowers are the human factor. That's the Achilles heel against abuses of power, corruption in bureaucracies. They're one main reason I've stayed idealistic, more idealistic, because some of the most stinking bureaucracies have produced the most heroic whistleblowers. And that human factor is something that no one who's abusing power can ever avoid. There's always liable to be somebody with the guts to stick their neck out. And when you're engaging in abuses of power that can't be defended, you're in big trouble then.
Yeah. Tell us what GAP does for its whistleblowers.
We wear 4 basic hats. I've worked with about 6,000 whistleblowers since 1979, so it's a lot of functions that we do. One is defending them against retaliation by representing them. I almost always have about 20 clients on my docket, but a lot more folks through helping their lawyers, through kind of telling them the facts of life about what their rights are and what they're not. Coaching them to prevent retaliation so they won't need a lawyer, how to get away with committing the truth, we call it. A second thing we do is represent them to make a difference, to investigate their charges, to pursue investigations with IGs or other agents of accountability or with the media if the government doesn't want to hear it. The third thing that we do is all of the time trying to strengthen the laws protecting freedom of speech in this context. And we've led the campaigns we've been a leader in campaigns to pass or defend nearly all of America's whistleblower laws since I came, plus policies at the United Nations and the World Bank, and just finishing one in Serbia and for the Organization of American States. Then the fourth thing we do is share our lessons learned. We run a legal clinic from used to be Antioch School of Law, where I went and founded the Gap Clinic, and now it's the DC School of Law, and we make videos on continuing legal education for all the laws that get passed. We do law review articles and appear on programs like yours.
Yeah, and I say again, like Pogo, you know, you go on the website, I see like, I don't know, 12 to 15 images of people and names, and I say, how do they get it all done?
But a lot of it is because we're not lawyers who say, oh, we'll take care of everything, and by the way, you owe us $200 to $500 an hour. We're not commercial. We don't try to make money off of the cases, although, you know, we accept attorney fee awards and things. But it's a partnership with the whistleblowers. Before we'll represent someone, they've got to prove the case to me. And then we team up to make a difference. I'm not doing it for them. None of the Gap lawyers can do it for them. We don't have the time to, right. And we don't have the money.
Right. Now, it's a very interesting model. And one of the other things that I think is important for the listeners to know is both Gap and Pogo are 501c3s.
That's correct.
I think that's right.
I think you're C3 or... Or C4.
Pogo's a C3.
C3,
yes.
Which means that you're non-tax charitable type organizations for which you accept donations. So if any of our listeners are interested in learning more about either organization and want to help Pogo and Gap make a difference, I encourage you to go to their websites, read about them. And each website has a donate page where you can learn more about how to make a difference. Both organizations have been around a long time, do great work. And the next part of our show, we're going to start diving into an issue that the three of us talked about a month or two ago on a State Department panel. And as Scott says, we're going to get the band back together. But right now, we need to take our first commercial break. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. With me in the studio this morning is Scott Amey, General Counsel for the Project on Government Oversight, otherwise known as POGO, Tom Devine, who's been the legal director for forever at GAP, Government Accountability Project. Both organizations are public interest watchdogs, focusing on our government's watchdogs. And Scott, who are our government watchdogs? If you're inside this town, you know, everybody knows who they are. But for the listeners who might not really understand what we're talking about, fill us in.
Well, it was Tom mentioned it earlier with the Pentagon Papers, but the 1970s was a very turbulent time. So at that point, there were a lot of people that wanted to hold the government more accountable, senior leaders accountable, even Congress more accountable. And so there were a lot of pro-taxpayer protections that were coming out. And one was the Inspector General Act of 1978, and that created the IGs. Everybody refers to them as the IGs around Washington, D.C. But it was a creation of an independent watchdog for each agency in which they would fight against waste, fraud, and abuse. And they are now divided in what that work they do. They have an audit section and an investigation section. And the IGs are either come two ways. Either they're appointed by the president of the United States or they're appointed by an agency head. And they're in charge of conducting investigations. I mean, some of the IG community carry guns and are investigators. equivalent to an investigator for a police department. And the IG puts out their reports, either an audit report or an investigative report, makes referrals to the Department of Justice, can make referrals to suspension debarment officers at different government agencies to investigate both in issues in happening inside of the agency, but also outside. So we're taking, you know, the IGs are taking a look at contractors and grantees and recipients of federal funds to make sure that money is being spent wisely and that we're not wasting any funds.
You know, they are there to uncover fraud, waste, and abuse. And as Scott, you point out, that could occur from inside the federal workforce of each agency or department, or it could come from outside. People trying to do business with that particular agency and engaging in some sort of fraud against the agency in a contract or the performance of a contract. And that's all that investigative work. Of course, the audit side of the house are a bunch of very, you know, dedicated government auditors who are auditing the books. They're the internal auditors. And a lot of good information about the running of a government agency, you know, the politics of our day have got us all whipped up about looking at investigation reports, but audit reports, and I know from POGO, can be, you know, really sort of where the rubber meets the road about how effective is the spending of government money that's been paid by taxpayers and appropriated out to the agencies. So I know we focus a lot on the investigative side of the house, but the audit side of the house, you know, the bean counters is really sometimes gets lost in the shuffle.
And a lot of times, even with those audits, they're auditing, is there paperwork in the files? You know, have contractors or grantees turned over the paperwork? Has the government collected it? Did they check it properly? You know, did they kind of do the compliance things that need to be done to keep the government operating effectively? And so it may not even involve money, but it is, are we in a good place with the administration and the oversight of the money that we do spend?
Yeah, and as you point out, there's essentially those two sides of house in any IG office, two kinds of IGs. One is appointed by the president, the other is appointed by the agency head. And in the last few years, one issue that is starting to make it to the bubble up to the top, if you work inside the IG community, you've been concerned about it for a while, but now the general media is starting to pick up on it, and that's the number of vacancies in the IG slot and the length of time a position, an IG position's remained open, right?
Right. And it's a funny issue because even according to the inspector's general own reports that they have about 620,000 hotline complaints a year, and they have mandates by Congress, and they have agencies like POGO or GAP that expose issues and present them that they want to take up and investigate. And so there's plenty of work to go around. But at the same time, currently we have the IG community has 10 vacancies with the Department of Interior. I think that vacancy has been open for over 2,000 days. Yeah. I think it's soon approaching 2,100 days.
Can't we just all agree that means that the president's abandoned the idea of filling the vacancy?
Well, six of those vacancies are presidentially appointed and four are by agency heads.
Right, but Department of Interior is a presidential appointment, as is AID and Archives. Just AID. I'm looking at POGO's website, right. Material from your website. And it's just 2,100 days. What's the point?
Well, there's some issues with it. I mean, one, this is a thankless job, and so it's sometimes difficult to find qualified candidates that are willing to step forward and, in essence, put their head on the chopping block for a number of years, being critics of the agency that you're representing. But then also there's politics involved in this. You know, there are Senate holdups of some of these positions. There's people that aren't going to make it through the Senate confirmation process. And so at that point, these vacancies stay open a lot longer than they should. And when you're talking about the Department of Interior, GSA, USAID, I mean, they're positions that we really need. We need a presence. We're in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're spending a lot of money internationally. USAID should have a full-time permanent IG that's in that position, and we shouldn't be waiting.
What's the downside of not having somebody who's appointed permanently to the slot? I mean, they put somebody in as an acting. Usually it's a career person and they're acting. So what's POGO's view of why having someone just act doesn't isn't a fulsome response to the job?
Well, there's a few issues. I mean, one is you're not going through the proper vetting by just having someone placed in that position with the acting title. Second, there's independence issues. I mean, if the acting, in most cases, the acting IG is actually looking for the promotion to the permanent IG position. So at that point, when it relies on the Senate or a presidential appointment, at that point, are you placing yourself in a very good position if you're strongly critical of the agency that you're acting as the IG for? And so at that point, it's always better to have a permanent IG in that position that doesn't have to worry about job security.
Or obtaining the job. Have to issue reports that they think will not prevent them from getting the appointment, which was the criticism over at AID.
Right. And it also, by having an acting, you're also preventing long-term strategic planning that you need in that position. And so at that point, the IG's office may not be as effective. There's arguments on the contrary that these people with acting IGs are very effective, but there have been some recent cases. You mentioned USAID. We've seen it at the Department of Defense, in which acting IGs have scaled back reports and have watered down some of their recommendations. And, you know, I don't know if that would have happened if there was a permanent IG in that position.
Appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate, really holding on to, has permanent place in his position. Tom.
This problem of acting IGs and creates the ambition wild card. And that's a conflict of interest with their independence. Right now, about half the active cases on my docket, about five cases, are kind of on the front lines of my docket, involve retaliation by the IGs against whistleblowers, alleged retaliation, or against their own staff for backing whistleblowers. And in every case, the roots of the retaliation occurred with acting IGs who are more concerned about getting that permanent post and not offending anyone in the political food chain that could obstruct them, than about the mission of the Office of Inspector General.
That's wild, isn't it, Tom? That now your docket is filled with whistleblowers. For most whistleblowers, the IG is theoretically the safe haven, right?
Well,
which we'll get to later on. Like,
yeah, it's
theoretically the safe haven, but now your docket is getting filled with people who are whistleblowers from inside the IG's office.
That vacuum of leadership in these institutions is absolutely poisonous, and it's creating very serious problems due to the ambitions. I mean, President Reagan, when he made the big push for offices of inspector general, said, I want junkyard dogs in there to go after fraud, waste, and abuse. These dogs are becoming rabid, and what's creating the illness is ambition, because there's no stability in the leadership.
And the IGs were created to be independent, and unfortunately, they've become more political. And that's one of the problems that we're seeing, is that some of the whistleblowers that are coming forward, whether it was at USAID, I think there were 8 employees that came forward, DHS, the VA, which we've all heard about the VA scandals that have been taking place. The Department of Interior has their own. Is now they're in
and
a position.
And you're talking about cabinet level. To me, like, I'm not an elitist, and I abhor social structure, and that somebody's more important because they have a title. I'm against all that. However, those were, Scott, were all cabinet level IGs, department level, meaning you are sitting over a huge part of the American mission. That's where a lot of money is, a lot of appropriated funds, a lot of work getting done for the American public, and a lot of the federal workforce. And when you look to see about where those inside whistleblowers, that list you came from, it's like almost all of the government. It's a huge part of the government.
It's a huge part of our spending for national security, homeland security, our treatment of veterans. And that's part of the problem, is there is motive. And some of these people are talking about political pressure from the top. Well, that was kind of the antithesis of the reason for creating the IGs in the first place. And so at that point, we have a system that, you know, is struggling right now, I think, in certain aspects to be as independent as it needs to be to really unearth fraud, waste, and abuse in inside the government and outside the government.
Yeah, and I come back to that the real reason this is happening is the bitter, divisive politics between Congress and this administration that started in 2009 at inauguration, because they're not There's, you know, it's a dance. It's a very unpleasant dance going on between the administration and Congress. I can't put a name up because they won't get confirmed, or I put a name up and they won't confirm. And then everybody turns around and start getting angry at these acting IGs who are career folks because they don't have the stability. They might have motivation. They might want to get appointed. It's just like name somebody, you know, appoint somebody, confirm them. Let's move on.
And idea of, well, the president can't get the appointments confirmed, I don't think that's an adequate excuse. The president could be in there fighting to get people in leadership roles to fight fraud, waste, and abuse. He's fighting right now for something he believes in. How about fighting for the folks who are supposed to be protecting whistleblowers, mm-hmm. but instead are harassing them?
Right. And a lot of people, a lot, huge parts of the federal workforce and the organizations that represent these federal employees feel like the president's kind of just walked away from issues that are important to them and left them wide open. And you would think that, as Scott points out, the last group of people you would leave subject to, you know, misdeeds would be the workforce inside an IG's office.
Well, and it's curious, too, because the president's appointment to other merit system and whistleblower rights jobs has been outstanding. He's appointed one of the best special counsels hope for. He's appointed the strongest MSPB in history for a commitment to employee rights. I don't know why he didn't extend that commitment to the folks who are in the front lines of actually dealing with whistleblowers exposed.
And the vacancies that are created currently that are because the agency head hasn't appointed an IG are also problematic, because at that point, is that a person ducking oversight? I mean, you do worry about whether that person doesn't want a strong person in the IG position that could be criticizing the agency, creating bad press.
Makes your life easier.
For the agency head and also for whoever's in the White House. So at that point, there are some real questions about all the vacancies on the politics going on and why those are the vacancies exist.
Yeah, no, I did want to trickle down from the cabinet level presidentially appointed to how's those issues different when you have a vacancy in an IG appointed by the head of the agency. But we have to take our mid-show break, Scott. When we come back, we are going to pick up with that. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
If you're a federal law enforcement officer, then you know to do your job, you tap inside sources. To have a voice on policy and legislation, you join FLIOA. And when you want federal law enforcement officer news and up-to-date federal court decisions, you read FedAgent.com. If you aren't reading FedAgent.com, subscribe today. It's free. Don't let this source pass you by. I'm John Adler, president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting this morning's show. We have public interest watchdogs here to talk about the watchdogs that are inside our government, the Inspector General community. With us in the studio, Scott Amey, the General Counsel from Project on Government Oversight, POGO. Also, Tom Devine, the legend. I keep saying this, Tom. The legend at GAP, Government Accountability Project, and me. But I share their passion for the issues that both organizations work towards. So I was really pleased to be able to host this show. Scott, before we took the mid-show break, we talked about the consequences of the president not nominating individuals to fill cabinet-level IG positions. But there's a slightly different dynamic at the agency level for those IGs, and there are many IGs that are not appointed by the president. They're appointed by the agency head, and that issue of independence is starting to, you know, there's another trajectory out there. I know at least in Grassley's office, they're starting to consider, you know, how are they really that independent if you're appointed by the agency head? But when the agency head leaves the job open, that's a different set of issues.
Certainly. And it does get to, you know, some questions about whether they want a strong watchdog in that position that is going to point out waste, fraud, and abuse inside the agency with how it's awarding money outside of the agency that, you know, it's in essence, you know, well, I don't want somebody looking over my shoulder and then putting it out publicly. And so there are real questions there. It's also, you know, there's been many problems with this on the independence of the IGs, whether they're presidentially appointed or agency head appointed, that there's been questions through the years. I mean, at one time, the IGs used to share the legal staff or would go to the agency's head general counsel for advice and counsel. And so, you know, Pogo put out reports back in 2008 and 2009 on some of these issues. And actually, there was a Whistleblower Reform Act of 2008 that fixed some of those independence problems. But I think we still have some issues. And now, even in the past year, there's been a bigger issue that's been raised. And that's getting into the IG's limited access to information from agencies. And it's a real issue. And I personally don't know what the final solution is, but it's it's creating a problem with claims of attorney-client privilege for agency people to report things to their general counsel and do what they need to do to protect their privilege against the IG Act for the IG to conduct an investigation and do its proper review and put out a report. And so I don't know what the answer is, but I think we have 72 or 73 IGs and approximately 47 sent a letter to the Hill saying this is a real problem with us, that we're having problems getting information out of the agencies, even out of contractors. In some instances, we've seen the same problem. And it seems to be, you know, it's going to butt the attorney client privilege up against the IG Act and what powers are in the law.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there's ways around that, and they can preserve the privilege. For me, that's a side issue in another show. To me, I've seen this more so under this administration, and maybe it was just building up as a culture inside the government. I've had this conversation with people I work with. I can't tell if this is a culture bubbling up from the sort of career bureaucrats, or is this being imposed at a political level and the culture is bubbling, is sort of dripping down. But the president ran, when he ran on a platform of open government and transparency. And at least in the work I do, and maybe Tom, because you're representing individuals too, it's become the opposite. It's how, you know, at what enormous efforts in representing an employee that the government, the agency goes through on the other side to find ways to withhold information in a sanctioned administrative legal proceeding where they're supposed to turn information over. So I see this more effort put into holding information back than just getting to the right, what is the right result in the case. And there's across agencies, I'm starting to see a mentality about it's just about how can we withhold it from you. And so I hear that issue, Scott, that you raise, and I say I feel it in my individual cases. If I'm feeling it in my individual cases in a legal proceeding that's supposed to require the disclosure of information, I kind of see where the IGs are at. There's clearly a solution. It's to, it's almost like the way they do, the government's always done wiretaps is, you know, when you hear information that you're not supposed to, you compartmentalize it and it doesn't get used in a criminal case. There's ways, they don't go to that extreme necessarily, but there's ways to do it. I think it's very interesting that the IGs are starting to sort of feel that at a more macro level, because I'm certainly feeling it at a micro level.
I think it would be unfair to blame the White House for bad faith in the anti-transparency trend that I've perceived too, Deborah. His first day in office, President Obama issued a memo to greatly expand releases under the Freedom of Information Act.
I haven't seen it in the FOIA's iFile.
He supported passage of the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act, fought hard for it, appointed good merit leaders. I think the problem is a lack of follow-through to enforce those values. It's been too much. I don't know whether it's they're intimidated or they're aloof, but it's been too hands-off in terms of following through. When I've had whistleblower cases involving breakdowns in transparency and appealed them directly to the White House, they would get in and have their lawyers help those whistleblowers and confront the agencies. And we had happy endings in those cases, thanks to the president.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the exception.
Yeah.
The rule is they're AWOL. The agencies pretty much have a free hand to do what they want, and they don't want accountability, and the president ain't getting in the way.
Yeah. And that is something you hear and feel after however many years of his administration over and over again inside the federal workforce, really disconnected from whatever his values are, making it down into the workforce. But Scott, I feel the IG's pain at a macro level, and you know, be careful what you wish for, because Congress may act, and it may really, you know, it could upset the apple cart.
Well, it's great you brought in Congress here, because that's part of the problem. I mean, that's the party politics that's going on with a lot of the issues, and IGs in a lot of cases have mandates that come from Congress, whether it's legislation or report language. Something comes to them and says, you shall conduct this investigation. Well, guess what? That's being tailored by people in the Senate, people in the House. And
it's perceived, it's getting to be perceived that there's a political agenda behind that direction back to the IG.
And specifically, there's not a lot of then bipartisan cooperation between the chair or ranking member in deciding what to move forward with and what to ask for. And so at that point, it is just one party controlling it, saying, I want this information for, you know, and in essence, with this agenda. And we know what the investigations are. I mean, they've been, some recently in Washington, D.C. with Fast and Furious, with IRS. And so, I mean, they've been around, and that's the problem. And in essence, are people trying to use the IGs as a pawn for their agenda and tear down an agency, tear down a program, you know, tear down policies and missions that the White House is promoting? And at that point, you know, I don't know if that's good for the taxpayers in the long run.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's not good for the democracy in the long run. These guys are supposed to be, and women, these inspector generals are supposed to be independent, and their independence, that sort of irony, is they should be independent from all politics, not just politics with inside the executive branch. But there's more to say about that. What I wanted to do is ask Tom the relationship between whistleblowers and the IG. It's changing more. It's getting more magnified. Issues are getting more magnified. I sort of feel that and perceive it in the last 5 years or so.
Well, it's getting higher stakes, that relationship. And that's why there's an imperative that we get the institutional act together for the OIGs. Under the Inspector General Act, Section 7, they've always had significant responsibilities to investigate retaliation against witnesses in their cases. Well, that's just common sense. If you don't protect your witnesses, you're not going to have them. But they've never really had the authority to follow through and act on those investigations. They can make a recommendation coming out of the probe. The Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act required every agency, IG, in the government to have a whistleblower ombudsman to help facilitate implementation of the stronger
rights. Have they gotten
rights.
There?
They're starting. In fact, Gap and Pogo have been doing training of the ombudsman at the request of that cadre of officials, because they want to do their homework and do a better job. Presidential Policy Directive 19 for the intelligence community pretty much formalized all rights for intelligence community whistleblowers through the ODNI, Office of Inspector General, Whistleblower Ombudsman. All Military Protection Act, Whistleblower Protection Act rights are enforced through the DOD, Office of Inspector General. They have a very key role in protecting whistleblowers, but in some ways that's horrifying to folks like us at Gap, because it's in practice, too often it's been asking the fox to protect the chickens, and you couldn't ask for a worse guardian. It's not always the case, and there's plenty of very dedicated, committed IG investigators. But the rule has been the IG is a threat to the people it's supposed to be protecting. And that's just unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. It's been that way. Almost every case I've seen, almost every case, not every, I don't know how it ends up, but the investigation gets turned around on the whistleblower. And you know, it's just, I know I'm swimming upstream.
In a lot of cases, and I just want to give one specific example, is Tom mentioned it, the DOD IG is supposed to protect whistleblowers that make protected disclosures. And so there's a statute in the U.S. code on it. And last year we had a whistleblower case in which they declined to take his case because he wasn't protected. They said he didn't make the disclosure to the right person. And they limited the person to, in essence, one specific person that he had to make the disclosure to. Well, that violated the intent of the law. Congress had expanded the law. And finally, Senator McCaskill, along, I think, with about 8 or 9 other bipartisan members, House, you know, Senate Democrats and Republicans, all came together, sent a letter to the DOD IG, and finally the IG responded and said, yes, we interpreted the law very narrowly and we will expand our interpretation. And they've actually gone back and reopened that specific case. And so,
but in the meantime, you know, what happened to that person's life?
Well, just to put an exclamation point on Scott's insight, right now, a number of my cases that are gobbling up the most work to help them are people from the Department of Defense, Office of Inspector General, who were in charge of defending the whistleblower protection program. And they found themselves the target of ugly retaliation because they were defending the program to protect whistleblowers. For goodness sakes.
Yeah, it makes me sit back in my chair and have a speechless moment because I just don't understand how that culture developed to the point that the people who are supposed to be protecting whistleblower rights are themselves engaging in acts of whistleblower reprisal. But I want to get back to that after our last commercial break, because I think there's a whole lot more to be said about that. Because I raised that issue with you, Tom, a few minutes ago. Where's this culture coming from? Is it coming from the bottom up, the top down? Where's it come from? I think it's very interesting. If you don't know the root cause of it, how can you fix it? We're going to take our final commercial break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is, GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show. I have two public interest watchdogs here to talk about the government's internal watchdogs. With us from POGO is Scott Amey, their general counsel, and from GAP is Tom Devine, their legal director. Before we took that last break, Tom, I almost basically cut you off as you were talking, putting the exclamation mark on what Scott had been saying about what's going on inside of DODIG. Where the people who work in the IG's office, who are supposed to be protecting whistleblowers themselves, feel that they are the act of reprisal.
It's a very dangerous job in the federal government to be responsible to protect whistleblowers. If you do it, you're liable to get the whistleblower treatment. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that at the Department of Defense Office of Inspector General with numerous employees, some of what are going to be our major cases over the next year. And just when you announced this program on the Fed News Radio website, I started getting more calls and emails from whistleblowers about retaliation by the Department of Defense, OIG, which has probably the largest responsibility in the executive department to fight retaliation. It couldn't get much more Orwellian. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's news stories. There have been news stories about the same sort of treatment inside of DHSIG with regard to agents who tried to bring up into reporting that went out of their office with regards to Secret Service and the Cartagena prostitute scandal. Everything's a scandal. It's the word of the decade. And they themselves found themselves really hit hard by claiming reprisal by the IG. And I wonder, how do we explain? I don't understand. How do we explain this treatment? What is it that is going wrong inside of these offices where they're tasked with protecting whistleblowers or at least serving whistleblowers? These are the people who get hotline complaints, who are supposed to decide what's real, what's not, what to look into. How do you explain that there's a great divide between their mission and how they act on it sometimes?
I'm not sure their mission is compatible with the instincts that we have. I think the cause of this problem is the institutional version of an animal instinct that's timeless, that we try to eliminate threats. And IGs are responsible to hold those who are abusing their power accountable. So those who have power and are misusing it are threatened by them. And it's like war. All's fair. Anything that works, by all means necessary, stop the threat mm-hmm. to those who have that power and can't defend how they're using it. And it's not surprising to me at all. It's like we have to go counter
it's very
to
disappointing.
Traditional, knee-jerk, almost instinctual trends in order to impose accountability effectively. And, you know, some of it is just this problem of it's always going to be dangerous to catch the wrong crook. It's been in the movies for decades. It will never be able to get around that being vulnerable. Part of it, though, can be corrected through just having our act together a little bit better. A lot of the retaliation against whistleblowers by IGs is not necessarily bad faith. It's unwitting. They get referrals from agency management, and the agency management doesn't say, this person is a whistleblower, I want you to take him out. They say, this person is a jerk, this person is a crook.
Yeah, he came in late. He's falsifying his time and attendance.
Yeah, it's always a pretext, and their job is to go out and investigate the alleged crime. I think,
but they historically do a very bad job at that. I've represented these people who feel that they're now, you know, there's a referral to the IG for alleged misconduct because they blew the whistle. And when you sit and talk to the agents, because, you know, you eventually get interviewed for your misconduct, you know, they don't even want to hear it. Like they have to they tick off the question, Tom. They're like, why do you think that this person would do this or say this about you? And then, you know, they give their explanation. I blew the whistle. This is reprisal. And I swear, agents, their eyes glass over. They're just not interested.
Well, there needs to be a culture shift in those agencies from law enforcement to law enforcement against fraud, waste, and abuse to also defending the law against those who challenge fraud, waste, and abuse and are made victims by it. And, you know, I think it would be very constructive if in these reform proposals we imposed a requirement that IGs screen whether or not there's been protected activity by the whistleblowers, and that managers who make these referrals, they have to disclose. They've got some transparency requirements. Full disclosure, has there been any protected activity by this person in the last year? Not that it necessarily draws a conclusion, but so that it's on the table and it's respected, that there may be another dimension, a hidden agenda to this referral.
And that's one of the things I think Tom described it when he was describing Gap earlier, is there's sometimes a missing of the human element, in the sense that these IGs, they take it, the complaints and the hotline complaints that come in, and they look at them as, okay, what report? They look at the end product. Is this an audit? Is this a, you know, report? Is this going to go to Congress? Is there going to be a hearing on this?
Am I going to get a conviction?
Right. A referral, right, to the Department of Justice. Are we going to, you know, is somebody going to be held accountable? But they don't realize that there's a person behind that has struggled, that have seen things and may be fighting on a daily basis some kind of reprisal in the workplace. And they kind of, I think that kind of gets swept under the rug.
Mm-hmm. And one of the other things that to me is connected to that point, Scott, and people in Congress are starting to get interested in this. Why does it take so long to do an IG investigation? For God's sakes. Okay, I'm gonna step down off my soapbox for a second. But in the old days, because I saw Tom's been at Gap 35 years, I've been practicing law at the law firm 25 years. Scott, you have some catching up to do. And 25 years representing federal employees. And, you know, on average, an IG comes around, you're accused of misconduct. It's, you know, at least 3 months, maybe it's six. You do not get in and out of an IG investigation under 10 months, a year, 14 months. It's crept up. Is that because there's too many complaints, not enough bodies? But people on the Hill, our representatives, because that's what the administrative leave piece is. And that's the other thing. It's like, oh, my God, I referred you to the IG. The IG's open investigation. You're out on administrative leave. That's the number one thing, Tom, they do to get these people to retaliate is they get them out of the workplace. And they use the IG investigation to do that. But it's ticking up. It's taking too long. And then people take advantage of that.
Well, there's one thing that I think is really important here, and that is, and we've done, you know, some criticism of the IGs, but the GAO has...
I think we've done a lot.
A lot, right.
Maybe
I have a list. But I mean, the one thing is oversight is one of the first things that's cut, especially now as we're downsizing, you know, the federal budget. But the IGs on average return for every dollar that they spend investigating, return about $12 back to the federal treasury. I mean, I think the
HHS IG is like number one because they do Social Security or Medicare, Medicaid fraud.
And I think agriculture is really high. They're almost $14 for every dollar
Food
that they spend.
Fraud.
Right. And so at that point, the IGs, you know, perform very well. I mean, in the atmosphere that they're
really important
and they're very, very important. But it does raise questions about if you're going to cut oversight, if you're going to take away their power, do they have all the power that they need? One of the questions I ask is these days is what is fraud? I think it's a lot harder to prove fraud than it used to be. I mean, now things are just settled up. It was a cost of doing business. We're outsourcing more. We raised issues earlier in this discussion about do they have access to all the information that they need, either from an agency, a contractor, a grantee, a federal aid recipient, you know, whatever it may be. I mean, at that point, do the IGs have all the tools that they need to even go after all the money? They're providing a good return on their dollar, but could that even be higher if they had better tools and more tools to use in their toolbox?
Mm-hmm. Would it be much higher if the whistleblowers felt safe working with the IGs? And you know, I hate to be a wet noodle, but I think it's important to kind of rally your listeners around helping groups like Pogo and Gap change this trend, because things are getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
The investigations by the IG since passage of the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act increasingly have an edge to them, and they're criminal investigations. And managers are choosing to refer an employee to the IG for a criminal investigation rather than go through all the muss and fuss of an adverse action. And it's worse harassment and has a worse chilling effect. It's very easy. You only need one agent to bully someone. You can't lose. The worst that'll happen is you close the case, and it's terrifying for mm-hmm. the employee. And the effect on the rest of the would-be whistleblowers is even worse. And if the IGs have had a problem with independence in the past, it's about to get worse, because we've just had a federal circuit court ruling saying that jobs which are called national security sensitive no longer will have independent Merit Systems Protection Board due process rights.
Right.
The merit system will be basically an honor system for agencies with those employees. And the Office of Personnel Management has issued proposed rules that every employee of an Office of Inspector General will be a sensitive job, which means they have lost the safeguards for job independence, not just institutional IG, but job independence that have kept the federal labor force professional and nonpartisan since 1883. And that's going out the window now.
Yeah, no,
We've got hard work to do.
I'm with you, Tom, and I see it in many different places. But I see also Scott's point. I mean, we've spent a lot of time saying what's wrong. There's so much that's right, but there's I just feel like the politics of our times are getting in the way, and we're not plugging up and fixing these problems quick enough so that, you know, things seem to go off the rails. And I wish I could have a show for another hour, but unfortunately, you're both going to have to come back, and we're going to have to strike up the band again to continue the conversation. Thank you for joining us.